Session number 13582, reel number 3.
Mr. Shran, reel 3. So, the heavy battery, the battery of heavy guns, was called Friedrich August.
That's right.
But you, were you still on the AA guns?
I was still at the AA guns, yes.
September 44. Yes.
And I must tell you, whereas all the crews of the heavy guns were under heavy concrete, because they were bunkers, you know, 3 and 4 meters, what, 12 to 14, 15 feet deep. We were outside. We only had ordinary shelters. And we took the brunt of the bombing, of course. And not only that, we were expected, you know, to fight low-flying planes as well. So I think the main fighting was really done, if one can speak of any fighting at all, by the members of the anti-aircraft guns.
So you had a much worse job than the heavy
than,
people?
Than the people there, yes. Although, I must tell you this. On one or two occasions, people were sent out by order from the commandant to find out where the enemy, in this case the Canadians, had dug in. And on one of these missions, one of our lieutenants was killed. And an Obermacht, which is equal to probably a sergeant in the army, was very badly wounded by shrapnel. And at that particular moment, I was inside the heavy bunker. And we could look through the spy holes, and we saw this poor chap, yes, and we saw this poor chap collapsing outside the big iron door and bleeding quite profusely. And now everybody said, well, somebody has to bring the fellow in. So they called for orderlies, for medical orderlies. The old man said, where are medical orderlies? Of course, nobody came forward. So in the end, without an order whatsoever, I haven't told anybody about this. I opened the door and I ran outside and I brought him in. And I thank the Lord right up to this day that nobody shot at us. Because obviously we must have been in the field of the Canadians and they could have easily picked me up, and him, they let me bring him in.
So you think it was an act of compassion?
It was. It was. And it's a funny thing, I've never talked to anybody about this. But I believe that had something to do with it, that a day later, I was awarded the Iron Cross.
How were you treated when you were captured?
Quite good, actually. Although I must tell you that such was the situation. Boulogne had only just fallen. The Canadians had taken thousands of prisoners of war. They obviously hadn't got shelter for us, so for about, I believe it was nearly a fortnight, 10 or 12 days, we were lying in a field, in an ordinary field, on top of Boulogne, waiting to be shipped to England. And you must remember by now it was October. Now to stop us from getting too cold and probably getting pneumonia and things like that, we dug in. We actually went inside the earth and then underneath to keep the cold out. And one or two chappies, I understand, who had dug in too far, got killed by the earth collapsing on top of them. But, like I said, I can't blame them for keeping us there because they simply didn't have the chance but for us to get back to England because the port wasn't open yet.
Where was this place?
This was Calais, just on top of Calais. So that was pretty bad.
Where did they give you food and water?
Oh, they gave us food all right, yes. Once a day, yes.
Was it enough?
Well, I think so. It was enough to sustain us. On the other hand, I remember one idiot actually trying to break out. One idiot trying to break out and running to the barbed wire, towards the barbed wire. And of course, the guards started shooting at him. And first shot over the head of him, but in the end shot in his legs and he fell down and he was taken away. But I don't think he was killed. Which again, I feel was good, because they did fire warning shots over his head, and then instead of aiming for his body, they shot him in the thigh and brought him down like that. Yeah.
So you were in charge of the Canadians? It was the Canadians who were in charge of you?
The Canadians, yes. But then they handed us over to the British, you see. And then when we came to England, we came to Kempton Park, the racecourse outside London. That's where we first came to.
Where did the Canadians Kempton hand Park. You over to the British?
Well, once they loaded us onto the ships, I dare say. Or already when we were in the camp. I don't know. Although the camp, of course, I don't know. It might have been Canadians, it might have been British soldiers who guarded us.
So you were a POW in Kempton Park?
Yes, but just for a very short while. Because there we were deloused. We were given new underwear. You must remember living outside for 12 days. You get pretty dirty, don't you? So there we were deloused and given underwear. British military underwear, which was quite good, we all thought. And we kept our uniforms. And of course, when I was taken prisoner of war, I must tell you this, my Navy pass was taken away from me. But when I became a British citizen in 1954, the War Office actually sent me my passport back here. It was sent back to me after I had become a British citizen. I had forgotten all about it, which was a blessing in disguise, because this helped me to claim a pension in Germany. I am now in receipt of a pension in Germany because I had signed on. I was classified, you know, as a serving officer.
What were your impressions of Britain when you got here in 1944?
Well, first of all, we saw the racecourse, which is not much to be impressed by, quite honestly. And then we were put not in cattle transports, but in proper trains, and we were sent to Cambrai in Scotland. I was being interviewed, first of all, and I was asked questions, do you still believe that Germany can win a war and things like that, and of course, being a cocky so-and-so, I said, yes, of course I do, you see. More out of spite than out of conviction. I'm sure it was more out of spite than conviction. And of course, that made me probably straight away somebody who had to be sent away under heavy guard. Anyway, we were sent to Cambrai in Scotland, in Perthshire. And only about 15 years ago, I went to this camp and I took a photograph of it. It's still there. In fact, somewhere I got a photograph of it.
Do you remember any other questions they asked you at Cambrai?
At Cambrai? Oh, well, yes, many questions we were asked there, because we had three compounds. There were two compounds for officers and one for ordinary Navy crew. the third compound was practically all submariners, and they were all classified as C. You see, they had this classification. A were the anti-Nazis, B were the middle of the roads, and C apparently were the Nazis. And of course it was something against the Geneva Convention. You are not allowed to classify a prisoner in any political way whatsoever. So again, out of spite, we protested against this, which of course probably meant that we were all classified C.
Was the treatment any different from the other classes?
The treatment was actually quite good. The food was quite good. And we actually were allowed to leave the camp by word of honor in groups of about 30 or 40 to go for a walk. Mind you, only certain people. And I'm glad to say that everybody kept his word and nobody absconded. So Christmas 44 was rather moving. And then, of course, we heard about the Battle of the Bulge, Rundstedt's offensive. Again, people thought, well, perhaps old Adolf will still do it. He will still pull it off. But, of course, that was a flash in the pan, as you know. While that was going on, Aachen had already fallen and they were already on the Rhine.
Were you put on work parties in England?
During the war, we absolutely refused. Because we always said there are certain rules laid down by the Geneva Convention about the behavior and treatment of prisoners of war. And please stick by that. But then after the war, yes, I did volunteer. First of all, from there, I was sent up to Caithness, right up in Scotland, with lots of other people, which was a camp near Loch Botten, which is near Cirtha and Vic, between Cirtha and Vic. And there I spent that very cold winter.
46, 47?
Yeah. But there I had already decided to go and help and go with working parties and do certain. I helped in the kitchen, for example, for the ordinary Scottish guards. And I helped unload things at the station of Loch Wotton and became very friendly with the station master, Mr. Mackay, who had two lovely daughters. Mr. Mackay with the hole in his eye. We used to make fun of him. Lovely little chap.
Was he blind?
No, no. It just rhymes. But he had two very nice daughters, Millie and Anne. We still remember them. And from there, I volunteered. I must have probably been classified after several more interviews, B. They knew I was never anti-Nazis. So from there, they sent me then down, this was in 46, to a military hospital in Tidworth.
Why a military hospital?
Well, Tidworth, they sent me to Tidworth camp. And from there, I applied for a job in the hospital, because they wanted somebody who could speak English. And my English was probably not as good as it is now, but it was passable. And in the military Tidworth, in the family hospital at Tidworth, they had orderlies, German orderlies, and two German doctors, although they could speak English. And I became the general factotum there. I helped in the kitchen, and I also took out the dogs of the commanding officer, which was a lady, Hartley Street specialist, her name was Summon, Major Summon, and she spoke quite good German. And because I took care of her dogs, two sausage dogs, dachshunds, and got them scraps of meat, you know, I was a blue-eyed boy. I really had a very good time there. In fact, I liked it, and I stayed there for about 13 months. In fact, in the end, I got from the matron a certificate that I could be recommended as a cook anywhere, and that my behavior had been excellent and things like that. I got these papers here. If you are interested, I will show them to you later on. And I made friends with nurses and with medical personnel and with the quartermaster, Captain Clark. We became quite good friends, actually.
Were you having to have some kind of political indoctrination or instruction?
We did get some of it, yes. Another thing we were forced, more or less forced to see, was the dreadful things that happened in the concentration camps.
You mean the films?
The films, yes. And we were absolutely shocked by it. I must say we were shocked by it. I saw lots of people coming out of that cinema with tears running down their eyes. We just couldn't believe that anything like that could have happened. And of course then the very hard right wingers, they said, oh, this is all propaganda, you see. You still had some idiots there.
But
we knew it wasn't. My own, well, I was ashamed of calling myself a German then after I had seen that. We knew there were concentration camps, and contrary to what generally has been said, that most of the Germans knew about these atrocities, I can categorically state this is not true. It is a lie. Not even the soldiers knew about it. And those people who were guarding these camps, they were sworn to secrecy. They were not allowed to talk about anything that happened there. On cause of death, probably, you know, if they did. So they kept their mouth shut. And I assure you, we did not know. We knew Jews were rounded up and put away, but we did not know there was this genocide, which is unexcusable, dreadful.
What did the political instruction or indoctrination consist of?
Well, mostly to show us about the difference between dictatorship and living in a democracy.
Did it have any effect, or was it
I'm sure it did. In my case, it did. In my case, it did. Because I was quite pleased, you know, to come back to England. Once I knew I could come back. And then in the end, as I told you, we gave up the idea of going to South Africa. So instead of pursuing my mining profession, I became a baker confectioner.
In Reading, you said?
In Newbury. No, here
in
Newbury.
Newbury.
I went to the Reading Association, or Students Association, on cash courses, you know, to learn things.
But who conducted these indoctrination courses?
Well, mostly German Jews. And again, some of them I became quite friendly with. There was Lieutenant Schumacher and one or two other chaps who had come from Berlin. And I found them to be quite friendly, where some were very nasty. In fact, when we came to Kempton Park, when we received there, of course, over the intercom, we were more or less made fun of. But then you expect something like that, you know.
How did they make fun of you?
Well, there come the chosen people, you know, the Meisterrasse and things like that. How do you feel now being members of the Meisterrasse, Niva? And things like that.
So this was by German speakers?
By Jews. Obviously German Jews who were doing this. Yes.
But when this chap you mentioned,
Schumacher,
gave this course, was this in Caithness?
No. This was already down here in England.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts was that?
I can't remember now the exact. Can't I remember the exact name of it.
Did he go on for days or months or what?
No, usually just for days. But some went for longer courses. I understand some stayed there. And they actually went back to Germany earlier than I did. And some others did. I didn't go back to Germany until 48, in March 48. Which meant I was a prisoner of war for 3.5 years.
Did your comrades feel the same as you about the effect of the political courses?
Most of them did, yes. I have here with me, this might be of interest to you, a camp newspaper which was issued in our camp, Camp 25.
Was it made by yourselves?
By ourselves, yes.
Can you read out the title? And the date?
The Fährmann. It means the Fährmann, the ferryman.
Der Fährmann.
Yeah, the der Fährmann.
Monatsschrift, and it was Lager
25, which was at Baden, near Lomborn. There was the main camp. And I must point this out to you. I played the guitar in the camp band, and I was also the compere. We used to give concerts in Newbury and in Kinbury. If you have a look at this here, POW concert in Kinbury, for example,